Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We're in the Quicken Loans studios on CBS Sports Radio. I'm Pharrell, along with Mafia and the Iron Chef, a national mortgage lender, Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Let's get focused. We got tons of baseball left. Starting tomorrow, a full slate of games. PharrellOnTheBench.com always delivers every day. Winners in baseball. Football is coming very soon. Preseason NFL snags will be on the table then. College football blasts off. We'll be ready. We'll be in Vegas the week of August 27 for the opening of college football season and doing the show live at the D. You need to be a member of PharrellOnTheBench.com, though, and get all the action every single day. Sign up today. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227, is brought to you by Geico. Hey, everybody. Here's a quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. Do you need homeowners, renters, or motorcycle insurance? Do get it all at geico.com. So going back to the egregious error that I made, I was looking at Faldo, and I said he had the career slam. He did not. He finished second at the U.S. Open in 88, and second at the PGA Championship in 92. I thought he won those, actually. I misread it. So he finished second in both of those. So he's a six-time major winner, three at the Open and three at the Masters, but never the U.S. Open or the PGA Championship. And I just wanted to say I don't care. There you go. So, but he was great. As a golfer, I thought he was very clutch.
Whoops.
Yeah. Coming up later, Gina Mizell in this hour in about 15 minutes from the Denver Post to talk about the Nuggets and Michael Porter Jr. So before we get into that here in a little bit, what do you think of that situation, Shep? Porter. Is this now two back surgeries for this kid? One at Missouri.
Yeah.
Now one now this week.
Yeah. I mean, I still think he's not a generational player, obviously. I mean, I don't – he's great, but I think Ayton's the only guy in this draft.
How is he – but, like, how do we even know he's great when he never played?
Well, to me, it's like a Jabari Parker almost.
How do you draft a guy, seriously, that has a bad back?
They're the Nuggets. Since when have they ever drafted well?
Do you remember when people said that the Knicks should draft him and they drafted Knox instead?
He fell, man.
I think he actually is the better player, Knox.
Porter was a top two, top three player coming into college, though.
Yeah, but he doesn't play.
Right, I understand
so,
that.
So, like, there's no argument. He doesn't play.
Yeah.
So if you don't play, you don't matter. It's that simple. Like, it's all about productivity.
Sure.
When you watch basketball, all you care about is who's on the floor. Not some guy that's sitting on a bench with a back surgery that never plays.
But would you have said that 4 years ago about Embiid?
I thought that the way they didn't play Embiid was, you know, obviously safe for them. But obviously he felt he could play through a lot of those games that they wouldn't let him play. Because they were, you know, the process or whatever you want to call it. But I think that I can't compare the two of them because one of them's such a monster. And then the other one, to me, is just another player.
And plus,
I think he's overrated, like, just from the standpoint of he's gotten all this hype. And, you know, we never saw him play. You know, he never really did anything. So it's easier for me to gauge Embiid based on when he does play. In the NBA, which we've seen him play, he dominates. So I would say I'll take a 7-footer over some kid. To me, he's just another kid. I mean, so he was a great player in high school, but he never played in college, right? He just was always injured, and we just haven't seen him. And then they draft him, so they're assuming that he's going to right? He's going to get better, and he's going to be their franchise player. So he only played 50 minutes in college. Do you think they did the right thing drafting him?
I mean, like you said, we barely saw this kid. I mean, we saw him beat play at Kansas. He didn't hurt to the end of his career at Kansas. And you coming into that draft, knew his foot was busted, knew he was, you know, going to get the surgery coming in. You're drafting him banged up and saying, okay, we're going to sit this guy and wait for him to come back healthy. I mean, Porter came back after the back injury for that NCAA tournament game, did nothing, and then was supposedly healthy. And then all of a sudden, as the draft gets closer, there's red flags from everybody about his back. You know, it wasn't really said that, okay, we know that he's going to be okay and he's going to come back. It was, wait, this guy screwed up again, even though we thought he was going to be healthy. And for it to be the back again two times in less than a year for a kid so young to have back problems as a big guy too, that scares me. I mean, that's what did in your boy Bird. You have backs, that's hard to come back from. No pun intended. That's something that ends careers.
It's horrible. It is horrible. So, I mean, you can't trust it, right? Is there anything worse than seeing Larry Bird laying on the floor at the Garden on a bag of ice?
That's exactly who I was actually thinking of.
I mean, once the back goes, you're screwed, right?
Right. Now, he was 37 years old. So a guy like Porter is young enough, his body will acclimate itself, where you can have a speedy recovery. It's all relative, but he can ultimately come back in his career. Bird was done. But if Bird can't come back, because Bird was all skill, he wasn't athleticism, then how can we expect Porter after his second back surgery? You're right.
Yeah, I don't know. He also had a hip problem he's already had, and certainly with the back problem, he's had plenty of back spasms that have led to all this. And I have no idea anything about the L3 and L4 spinal discs, but it just doesn't sound good when I got to tell you, when you're that young and you're having these problems with your spinal discs, I mean, does that just has got to scare you. I mean, it's obvious. What he went 14th in the draft. That's why he went that low, right? Is it not low? 14 is not low for the National Player of the Year in high school? Is that not low?
It's definitely low. When he was coming into college, they were talking about him being the top pick. They were talking about him going number one next year, and then he got hurt, and it all went downhill from there. I mean, obviously 14 is still good, better than a lot of guys, but this is a guy who was going to be top three guaranteed before all of a sudden his back just gave out on him starting in Missouri.
So let me ask you guys a question. Does he have a better career than Greg Oden?
You know, Greg Oden didn't have a career. So let's just be real about that.
Let's wait to see if the kid can get healthy before we even compare him. Like, yeah, if he gets on the court and plays 80 games, he has a better career than Greg Oden.
I have broken feet. I play more than Greg Oden. I play every night with broken feet. I really do. I mean, you see it.
Yeah, he was also like 100 pounds heavier than you are and another foot on top of you.
Well, it doesn't matter how big you are if your feet hurt. Trust me. It does not matter how big you are. I mean, if your feet are shot, you're screwed.
Bill Walton knows what you're talking about.
Bill Walton, if your back is screwed, I'm telling you. It's crazy, but it's true. I've just noticed, I'm watching the X Games here for the 7 millionth time in the last 70 years. The X Games, they have 15 of them a year.
Because now you could be the 70th time just this year, the way they have them everywhere.
Right. So I'm sitting here watching, right, and I'm thinking to myself, wow, these kids are really young in the crowd. I was looking at the kids. They're screaming and cheering on the athletes on the skateboards, right, doing the half pipe tricks and flying through the air, and all the kids are cheering, and they're all like basically my son's age, right? They seem like they're all 14 years old that are cheering them on, nobody else.
People in the competition at your son's age.
Is that what it is? It's all just a bunch of little kids that are watching this stuff?
Seems like it.
Is that what it is? Because, like, honestly, when I look at that crowd, they look like they're having a really good time, and I just feel really old. Because, like, I just have no – I'm like, what is going on here? Look at these kids. They're all, like – I mean, they literally look like they're, I don't know, 12 to 16 years old, right? Am I wrong?
And that's surprising because when the X Games really got popular, it was, like, when I was young, when I was, like, 12, 14, 16 years old, that's when it took off. You know, the Tony Hawk games come out that everyone was playing.
Right.
So you figure there was someone in my generation or around there in their 30s that got into it then. It would be, you know, at this event, but it's all kids.
See, I think when you watch it on TV, you actually don't realize it. Because when I hosted the Tony Hawk Stand Up for Skate Parks, you realize when you get there, like I went on top of that half pipe. I like walked up on top of it while he was doing all the tricks. I was up there with like, you know, him and all these skateboarders, these legendary skateboarders. And like I was with Jason Ellis and all these guys. And I was up there on that stand and I was like, oh, my God, that is really steep. That half pipe thing is just gigantic. When you're up there on top of that thing, looking down on it, I would no more jump on a skateboard and fly down that wall than fly a kite. Seriously. You think you're a badass until you get up on top of that thing and you will chicken out as sure as I'm standing here. It's like, it looks like it's like 25 feet straight down, right? I mean, I don't even know, but it's scary. Tommy in Pennsylvania, you're on CBS Sports Radio.
Howdy, what's up tonight? How you doing?
Hey.
How are those guys in the old well-kept gym going to be this year?
Who's that?
The old well-kept gym.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I hope they're better. I don't really see, I mean, the Hajan, how do you say his name? Hajanja?
The kid was on you.
Yeah, and then the kid Knox, I want to see him play. I thought he looked great in the summer league. I don't know how they're going to develop Robinson. I think he's going to be like a, I could be wrong, like a G League type player that they're going to bring along in a, you know, a few years. We'll see. But I want to see if and when Porzingis comes back. I want to see, you know, where he is after the knee surgery. Shep, do you think he'll play or do you think it'll just be a lot of knocks? Because, I mean, that team's changing like dramatically.
Yes.
Quinn left.
Yep.
But they stunk with him.
I love Befrat, you know, I love Kanter, and I think
I like him.
I love right, and I also think that the power of coaching is very underrated in the NBA. We overlook it. But we have finally, and I say we, I shouldn't say we, but we here I go again. The Knicks finally have a young,
legit coach,
up and coming, fiery head coach. And we need that.
Yeah. But that's great. It's fantastic. He's got a great young coach allegedly. And they got good assistants, allegedly. The question is, do they have players? And the answer is no.
I agree with that. But I have to be optimistic. I got to be optimistic about something with the Knicks.
Listen, I've rooted for the Knicks for 20 years, and they suck. Okay? I mean, what does the Knicks season consist of? The first month, we get excited. And then for 5 months, we suffer watching their games. They're so bad. You would never watch a Knicks game over a national game. You won't. Like, if the Knicks are on and a national game's on, you're watching the national game every time. Because the Knicks are so terrible.
Mike Breen's the best part about the Knicks, to be honest with you.
You know, probably. I think he's really good at what he does, but I also don't care about that, all that business. That's just me. I want to watch basketball. I guess sometimes, rarely, I'll watch a game and think, that the broadcaster is a big part of it for me. I'd say the guy that I like listening to the best doing a game for like informative reasons would be Hubie Brown. I like the way he just talks about the game when he's, you know, the analyst. I like him, but I guess I don't really listen that much. I mean, my days of like Chick Hearn are over. I used to like listening to him. You know what I mean? So, but I like Mike a lot. I just don't, sit around watching the Knicks because of that. I really don't. I can barely watch them because they're so awful. You know what I mean? Their games are so awful. And most of the time I'm watching their games with the volume down. So that's another reason. I'll watch them here in the studio and I got no volume on and I just sit there and go, God, they stink every night. It's just torture watching them. And you know, you got to watch them for 82 games. It's like having a fat girlfriend. Seriously, when your basketball team loses every night, I mean, it's just awful. I hate it. All right, 855-212-4227. We'll ask Gina Mizell about the situation with Porter out at the Denver Post next on the bench.
This is Pharrell on the bench.
All right, let's go out to the Rocky Mountains, the Denver Post. Gina Mizell covers the Nuggets. In the Mile High City. Hope you're having a great summer. Gina, thanks for coming on CBS Sports Radio. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, sort of coming down from the, you know, free agency draft summer league burst here in late June and early July. But, yeah, now we're sort of hitting the dead part of the year, and the Nuggets have sort of wrapped up their off season. But yeah, doing well. How are you?
I'm well. We kind of were interested in talking to you tonight because there's so many things that they've been doing to handle their business. Our primary concern was Michael Porter Jr. What did you think when they drafted him and then, you know, cut a deal with him? And obviously they knew that he had back surgery already, and they must have known that he was going to have another one. Is that about right? And then he had the second one now, I guess, this week. They knew of all this, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I think they've been very transparent and very, open about the fact that they know that the reason why Michael Porter slipped to them at number 14 in the draft is because of those health concerns, whether it was just his, you know, very shortened career at Missouri because of the back surgery. He obviously had some hip spasms right before the draft and had to reschedule a multi-team kind of pro day style workout. And then, yeah, this procedure that happened last week, during the off season and during the summer. So, you know, Tim Connelly, the president of basketball operations, has been, you know, very upfront about saying that they're going to take the long view with Michael Porter, that they're not going to put him on the floor until he's perfectly healthy, you know, not 80%, not 90%, 100%, that they feel good about him being out there on the floor. So I think, Nuggets fans and people who follow him, need to kind of temper their expectations that I'm not saying he's going to redshirt this season and not play at all, but, certainly I feel like anything that he does this upcoming season is kind of gravy just because of the long process of making sure that back is all right and that he's 100% before they put him on the floor.
When you, because you cover him, when you saw him make the move for him and he fell in their laps, what was like the first thing that went through your mind about the kid? Here's a former high school player of the year that's never had any burn in college. He was injured, and then he comes to the NBA and he's on an operating table, having his back. I mean, it's scary to me, an L3, L4 spinal lumbar surgery at his age, to me, is just, it scares the hell out of me, Gina. What did you think when you first saw that, you know, they were dealing with a superstar kid with, damaged goods?
Yeah. Well, certainly I was surprised that he slipped that far in the draft, all the way to number 14, because even earlier in the week of the draft, I mean, some were projecting that the Kings might take him at number 2, and obviously that didn't happen, and then every team kind of just kept passing him, and then when the Clippers passed on him twice, I was like, wow, okay, he's really going to obviously fall to the Nuggets here. But, I mean, when you look at the draft overall, I mean, a mid-first-round pick, that's sort of a 50-50 risk there anyway, as far as if that's going to be a hit on that pick or not. So, the Nuggets believe that the potential reward obviously outweighs the risk of the health there. So, and I think the important thing to note with this procedure is that, he was back at the facility in Denver earlier this week on Monday. That's when Isaiah Thomas officially came in and signed his contract. And there are pictures of him, shaking Isaiah Thomas's hand. They both have some Seattle ties, so, there's some connection there. But he was up and walking around, and so it's not like he's bedridden right now and can't move and all that stuff. So I think that's a good sign. But, no, you're right. I mean, this is a kid that's, 19, 20 years old and has already had two back surgeries. And we've seen from other guys that, that can be a tough thing to recover from, not just in normal life, but of course to try to be a professional athlete.
Right.
So, like I said, they're going to be very, very cautious with him and make sure that he's 100% because they believe in this core that they have, right now, as far as their other players, and they don't need a quick fix or a guy to come in and be the savior of the franchise right away.
He's there's no denying the guys can ball. We already know that and everything. There's all this like trepidation and worry for me, like as a, cause I play tons of basketball in my life, my whole life I played. And all I know is that like I have, like Bill Walton, I have bad feet, right? So I have like plantar fascia, I got bone spurs. I've had rotator cuff surgery. I've broken my tibia. I broke my hand in 5 places. All I know is, this is all I know, when you're injured. And because I play with all of this, and I mean, right now I got bad feet, but he's got a bad back. And all I know is if you got a bad back I mean, I just don't give the guy a longevity, like, you know, grade. I'm scared to death about longevity. Like, you take a guy, you want him to be there for 10 or 12 years, Gina. In my view, this is big money basketball here. I mean, they don't want Jokic to be playing with a bad back, but this kid's had two surgeries. My thing is, like, once you have problems in your body playing basketball, they, like, seem like they never go away.
Yeah, no, I think it's a definite concern. I mean, we've seen it in the NBA, not even necessarily on the playing side, but, you know, you hear about, you know, Steve Kerr and everything that he's gone through over the past couple of years, and just
right.
You know, players throughout the league that yeah, it's a tough chronic thing. Or, I mean, any serious injury is a concern. I mean, this past year for the Nuggets, you know, Paul Millsap tears a ligament in his wrist and doesn't look right when he comes back after 3 months, and they're saying it's going to be a year before he's actually fully healthy again. And that's something that, you know, you kind of repair and you know it's going to be right eventually. But yeah, no, it's a definite risk. And again, I think that's a huge reason why, or the primary reason why, that he slips in the Nuggets at number 14. And we'll just have to see, you know, how healthy he's able to get. But if he can get back to form, I think he can definitely help this team. But, you know, certainly there, like I said, there's a reason why he slipped. I think the Nuggets know why he slipped, and they just, you know, took the chance on him as you know, the last lottery pick, and we'll see how he does, you know, health-wise before he even gets on the floor.
Were you and your, like, colleagues, questioning it? Like, in terms of, was there any raised eyebrows? Or, like, you know, when they made the pick, did you see your peers and your, you know, your own thoughts racing through your mind? The things that, like, you know, like, I'm asking you all night. I just am still not convinced. Like, you are really convincing me with the information you're giving me, but I'm not convinced on him. Like, it's just, were all of you guys, like, to do this for a living? Were you looking at each other when they made the pick?
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely some, wow, okay, they're going to do this. you know, there was definitely that. And when you sort of got to the back part of the lottery, you know, the double-digit picks, and people just kept passing on him. You know, I was seriously writing, of course, you know, to make sure I was prepared
right.
to go. But,
right.
Yeah, no, it was definitely a mixed reaction, I would say, in the room that was watching the draft in Denver. There were some people that sort of, you know, felt the way that the Nuggets have presented this, as far as, like, hey, you know, you got it. Why not take that risk with the number 14 pick on a guy that was, you know, formerly the number one recruit in the country? And then there were some that were like, well, there's a reason why he's slipping this much. And
right.
So I think it's all just going to be a wait and see thing from this point forward. But yeah, like I said, you know, in the middle of the first round, I understand why they took the risk, but you know, it could end up being a thing where he never sees the floor or is never fully healthy. And that'd be a shame for a guy that talented, but it just shows how one injury can really screw things up for an individual or for where his place is on a certain team.
I hope he's recovers 100% and becomes a stud. I really do. Can you hang out a little bit? I want to ask you more about so much that they've done, the deals for Isaiah, the Jokic deal, and getting rid of some of the fat, that they've moved some players, and a guy that had been there a long time in Fareed. We're talking to the great young writer Gina Mizell out in Denver with The Post. She covers the Nuggets. We've been talking about Michael Porter. We'll talk about this roster and what lies ahead for Denver Nugget fans.
This is Pharrell on the Bench.
So tomorrow night at 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific, don't miss some Arena Football League playoff action as the two-time defending Arena Bowl champs Philadelphia Soul battle the Baltimore Brigade, only on CBS Sports Network. I know Shep will be anxious to watch that game. I'm talking to Gina Mizell. She is with the Denver Post and covers the Nuggets. So you... Let me get this straight. You were, you're from Phoenix. You went to Tempe, to ASU. Is that accurate? And then what was the gig you were doing? Were you covering Oregon State football or something? Is that accurate?
Yes, that is all accurate. There's some stuff in between there as well. But yeah, born and raised in Phoenix, graduated from Arizona State, and then have worked in Beaumont, Texas, and then Oklahoma City, covering Oklahoma State, covering Oregon State for the Oregonian in Portland. And then, yeah, I just wrapped up my first season in Denver on the Nuggets beat.
So we're on in all those markets. What did you like about you know, being up in Corvallis?
Well, first of all, Portland's an awesome city. I absolutely loved living there. But yeah, it was very interesting to cover a program that went through a lot of transition. I mean, my first season covering that team was Mike Riley's last season before he unexpectedly bolted for Nebraska. So that was an unexpected coaching search that I was tossed into right at the beginning of my time covering that program. And you know, then I covered the Gary Anderson era and actually left like 2 weeks before he then left Oregon State in the middle of last season. So I missed that part of it. I was already out in Denver covering the Nuggets. That was kind of in the middle of training camp. But yeah, it was interesting covering a team that, you know, was really bad after covering. I mean, I covered Oklahoma State's Big 12 championship run when they probably should have been in the national title game against LSU in 2011. So sort of going from one end of the spectrum to the other, as far as just going from one program that was, you know, really riding high and had the best season in their history to one that was consistently trying to get off the ground and trying to figure things out. But all of it's interesting, and that's all that we want as reporters. So had a great experience that at both of those places covering both of those programs.
Yeah, you know, you cover great teams, and then you, as a journalist, learn how to write when you're covering a lousy team. You find out what you're mm-hmm. made of. I mean, I did play-by-play in Atlanta for the Thrashers, and they lost whatever it was, 61 games. It was the worst. I wanted to jump off a building. But I was at Indiana. They won national championships under Bob Knight when I was there, and I covered him, and that was like basically, I mean, I looked up to him, so I'm one of the rare people that actually liked him. But I know it's like covering Satan, but I thought that I learned a lot from him. So my producer tells me you were like rocking straight A's at ASU when you were, and was Harden there at the same time you were there?
Yeah, I was there for both of James Harden's seasons. He's a year younger than me, so a year behind me in school, but yeah, that was obviously quite the time for the basketball program. And then consequently, the football program did not go to a bowl game in back-to-back seasons for the first time since the Great Depression. And naturally, that was the season that I covered that paper. So I guess that was my introduction to covering some disappointing football. But yeah, no, I had a great experience in college, you know, still have lots of family. Pretty much my whole family is back in Phoenix and was just there a couple weeks ago. So, yeah, they're very thankful for all of the experiences that have led me up until this point.
So why, because I've been to Tempe. I did my show there once for the Super Bowl when the Giants were playing the Patriots. And we all know what happened in that game. But I want to ask you, why did you – I think Tempe's a cool spot. I did a great show there one day. It was packed. It was crazy above that stupid library bar that they had down there in town. But let me ask you, why have you tried? This is just personal. Did you ever try to get back to Phoenix to like cover the Cardinals or anything, or you know, be in the market you grew up in, where your family is and everything? Is that like something still in the back of your mind?
Yeah, I mean, you know, never say never. And of course, again, like I mentioned, most of my family's still there. So I love going back and you know, really, you know, treasure my roots. And that's where I learned about journalism and learned to love sports journalism. I mean, there's people that are still working there that I look up to and still do and did when I was a kid. So, yeah, but obviously it's a massive market. So you sort of, you never expect to start your career there. And so, yeah, again, maybe someday, but I've been really happy also with the road that I've been able to go on too, just because, you know, I've gotten to experience different parts of the country and covering, you know, a bunch of different sports and meeting a lot of different people. And I'm really thankful for that too, because I think it's helped me, you know, obviously grow as a reporter, just because you gain perspective from that, you know, that way, but, you know, also just grow as a person too, after growing up there and, you know, not really living anywhere else in 22 years, and now I haven't been back in 8 years. So it's good to sort of have that perspective. And if I were able to ever come back at some point down the line, I think I would be a stronger reporter and a better person because of it.
So do you think, so Gina Mizelwood is from the Denver Post. Do you like covering the NBA?
Yeah, I really, really, really love it. Obviously, the travel is a grind, and the rhythm of 82 games is quite different from college football, where every game is so magnified and it's, you know, 1 week after the other, but it's only, basically a 3 to 4 month season, depending on bowl games and, you know, practices in the preseason and stuff. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I mean, the personalities in this league, just the, you know, the progressiveness, the even though, you know, people say the Golden State Warriors have ruined the NBA, there's still so many storylines, so many fun things to uncover and to write about. And this Nuggets team, too, I mean, you know, it's 2 years in a row that they've missed the playoffs by one game, but I think they have one of the more exciting young cores in the league with Jokic and Gary Harris and Jamal Murray and just what they've got going here. So to sort of cover a team that's, you know, potentially on the cusp of getting back to the postseason and maybe doing something really cool over the next few years, that's really exciting for me as a reporter. So,
you know,
I've had a blast, and I can't wait to go into year two.
Cool. You know, I think Nikola is a great player, and particularly his dish. I mean, I think the guy passes like Arvydas Sabonis. I mean, the guy can literally pass the rock, and he's had triple-doubles. I mean, he is amazing. He's like an 18 and 10 guy, but you know, now I think he's going to get bigger than that. I think he's going to be, you know, at some point a 22 10 type player. And I think if he's already at 6 dimes, I think this guy could actually, you know, be an 8-9 dime guy a game. And they just gave him a fat deal, so they must really love him.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, he's so much fun to watch, and there were certain passes that he made last season where it's, you know, over the shoulder, behind the back, and you're just like, how is this 7-footer, you know, doing this? It seems like every night he would do something that would just make you go, wow. And yeah, I think his star is only going to continue to rise. I mean, he's still just 23 years old, and you're right, they rewarded him with the big contract this year. He was in a situation where he could have either played out his deal, and then he would have been an unrestricted free agent next summer, and of course the Nuggets didn't want any part of that, so they declined their team option for this year to be able to negotiate that big extension. And so yeah, they're stoked that he's going to be here for the next 5 years. They've obviously built the offense around him. He's a centerpiece of everything for this team, and still has some room to grow, you know, can get better defensively, you know, maybe work on his athleticism and his body a little bit. But you know, certainly for a guy as young as he is, and a guy that was the 41st overall pick in the draft in 2014, you couldn't have asked for much more than what they've seen from Jokic at his first.
So I actually, Gina Mizell would have never posted. The guy I like watching ball is Will Barton. I think he's cocky, but I like his game. I thought he turned in like his best season last year. He was like, I thought, way over his normal type of productivity, and he took his confidence level to a new high. I like his game. I have to ask you, though, really quick about Isaiah Thomas and playing with Murray and playing on this team, how he ended up in Denver.
Yeah, no, it was obviously a very interesting, you know, signing, and there was a void to fill at backup point guard. Denver traded for Devin Harris at the deadline this past year, but he was an unrestricted free agent, and so they had a pretty big hole to fill. And so Isaiah Thomas is a guy obviously coming off the hip injury and lots of questions about his health, but him and Michael Malone have a history from their time in Sacramento together, so they've remained close and have a solid relationship. And you mentioned Will Barton, and he's now probably going to slide into the starting lineup, but small forward. And so you kind of now need that guy off the bench who can be a scorer and a playmaker and can kind of just get buckets when you need it. So, you know, obviously signing Isaiah Thomas to a one-year, $2 million veterans minimum deal, it's sort of another one of those. There's obviously risk there with the health, but if he, you know, misses time or isn't effective, then they also are really high on Monte Morris, who just signed a full NBA contract today, or agreed to a full NBA contract today after being on a two-way deal last year. He was their second-round pick a year ago and is, you know, more of a prototypical point guard, really good assist-to-turnover ratio, and was very, very solid in summer league, both scoring and distributing. So he's also a guy to watch at that spot. But, yeah, Isaiah Thomas is, you know, kind of the one, you know, new guy on this team after everything that they've done this offseason to unload some salary and to, you know, obviously lock up Jokic and Barton for the long term. So it'll be really interesting to see how he fits in. But if he can, again, get healthy, it seems to be sort of the caveat with everything.
Right.
I think he can be effective off the bench for this team.
Yeah, I just wish he'd get healthy for once and be happy for once, because I feel bad for the guy that he went from, like, they were talking about giving him a max deal to making the veteran minimum in Denver. It's embarrassing, because I think he's got more game than that. He's a warrior, that guy. He's a freak. I have to say this. I have under 40 seconds, so respectfully, I want to say this. Kenneth Faried, real quick to you, is he washed up? Because we got to watch him now in Brooklyn. Is he washed?
Well, his skill set isn't exactly ideal for the NBA in this day and age. I mean, he was a guy that, you know, he didn't play in a game after February 1st, so fell completely out of the rotation, even in blowouts. And, you know, I think obviously he's a guy who can rebound and brings a lot of energy and was kind of a fan favorite because of his longevity with the franchise. But just because he can't shoot very well and is inconsistent on defense, right. I think that's what pushed him out of the rotation. And it'll be interesting to see what his role is like in Brooklyn. But, you know, certainly, you know, a goal for the Nuggets was to try to unload his salary, and they were able to do that last week.
Yeah, get rid of him, and now we have him, and he'll be worthless for us. I just want to say you're awesome. I loved having you on the show. We'll catch up during the season. Whatever's left of the great Rocky Mountain summer, enjoy it. I've been there a million times. I've lived there. I've skied there. I go there. It's awesome. I'm glad you're doing well. Congrats on all your gigs and success, and I root for continued happiness with your gig with the Denver Post and covering the Nuggets. I look forward to getting to know you over the years covering the Nuggets coming up. We'll catch up with you during the season. Thanks for coming on the bench.
Hey, my pleasure. Appreciate it so much. Have a great night.
All right, Gina Mizell with the Denver Post. Great job by her talking Nuggets basketball tonight. I bet nobody saw that coming. Right upside your head. Hey, when we saw that Michael Porter story about a second surgery, I thought it was important stuff. So we gave you a little Nugget hoop tonight. Come on.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.